Thank you, David. Appreciate David and Aaron have been helping us, in particular, teach an English class on Sunday mornings. Maybe you've heard of Friends Speak. We're using that. And so we appreciate his help. So, yeah, married Monday will be 31 years. Okay. And as some friends of ours said, when they were married a similar amount of time, a guy asked, "Now, honey, how long we've been married?" And she said, "It's been 15 good years." And he said, wait, haven't we been married like 30? It's been 15 good years. So I don't know if mine is like that or not. But yeah, two daughters that we raised in Brazil. They both married ministers. One of them sitting right there. That's Kyle. That's my son-in-law. The other, Camille, that's Carly, married Kyle. And Camille married Darian, who's a youth minister with the Edgemere Church of Christ in Wichita Falls. Kyle works at North Mac as the involvement ministers. People are like, "Oh, you're just a little holier than thou, marrying your daughters off to ministers, right?" We were encouraging them, look, okay, date the pre-med guys and the engineers. And oh, by the way, if you could introduce some height into this bloodline, that would be really good. Failed on all accounts on that deal. I've got two ministers, very kind of average short height son-in-law, so there you go. All right. Well, cross-cultural evangelism. This, by the way, not a picture of our building. We'll show you that one in a minute. But just a congregation down in Lubbock that we visited, and just to get a notion of what this might look like. Well, cross-cultural evangelism, I'd say it's announcing the good news to a people group that's different than your own in some way. Usually we think of ethnicity, but there could be other cultural barriers there as well that we need to cross. And of course, the goal is to bring them to Christ and add them to His church. So there's a lot of good works out there we can do, but ultimately we want to bring them to Christ. Real quick question, if a missionary goes overseas to a non-English speaking country, what is the kind of the first and most obvious thing he or she should do? Learn the language. You got it. Okay, so we had to learn Brazilian Portuguese, and so I became fluent in Brazilian Portuguese, which means I get myself a lot of trouble speaking Spanish in South Oklahoma City, because it does. Someone has said it's like speaking Spanish with marbles in your mouth, Portuguese. That's how it sounds to them. It sounds a little garbled, like, I think he's trying to speak Spanish, but we're really not sure. Maybe he's Romanian. We don't know. So, all right. Okay, besides the language, though, there's some other things a missionary ought to know. What would be some of those things? Just holler them out if you've got something. A missionary going overseas ought to learn about.
Tradition.
Their traditions, right? Okay. You don't want to find out that to do this is very offensive. You don't want to, oh, that's the worst thing you can do is this. Don't do that. All right, see if they have any weird customs you're not aware of, right? What else?
They drive on the other side of the road.
That would be good. Okay. Kyle and Carly did 2 years of work in Australia. We went to visit them, and that's very disconcerting to get in that. I drove it, but it was felt weird the whole time. Yeah. You'd want to know that ahead of time. What else?
The religion,
certainly. The religion. Are they superstitious? Do they have a predominant religion? You got to know all that. You've got to learn all that. Their history. Know something about their history. Their spiritual history, if you will. All these things are important. Well, what about a new church plant? If you're starting from scratch here in the States, perhaps. Mike's been talking about that. Did two good sessions there. So maybe some of you are in there, and we'll see if they listened, right? What's kind of some things you ought to do in a new church plant? Going to a new part of town, let's say. What's that?
Network.
Network, okay. Kind of network and find out who, you know, people are. What else? What would you need to learn about that community, let's say?
Mindset.
Their mindset. That's excellent. Yeah, okay. Is it somehow different from maybe, even if it's the same city, let's say Oklahoma City or Norman, another fairly big city, if it's a different part of town, do they just kind of, is it sort of different? Do they have different ways of thinking and doing things? Are they blue collar? Is it a tech town, part of town where all the people working in technology live. Like Mike said, military community, okay? You'd want to know those things, right? Those are all important. Well, you would want to know, are there any different language groups there, ethnicities, immigrants? You'd want to know that, okay? So if you're going to plant a church there. Well, all those things that are important for missionaries to know when they go overseas, and all those things for church planters to know that are important, they're important for us as well in established churches, right? We need to know those things too and remind ourselves of those things. Do a few things here. We're going to look at a scripture. You all are dedicated Christians, so I know you know the scriptures about evangelism. I've got one, maybe one you hadn't thought of before as being an evangelistic text. Then we'll look at what we're doing at South Walker. Hopefully it inspires you in some way or you can learn from it. And then a few mission principles to apply. So that's what we'll look at. All right, so Matthew 5, 14 through 16, Jesus saying, I think primarily to his disciples, even though the crowd is there as well on the Sermon on the Mount, you are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on a stand, and it gives light to everyone in the room. It's not up there, but verse 16, in the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. Let's just go through there real quick and see if there's some sort of cross-cultural evangelism principles even in this text. You are the light of the world. Our status as light bearers is divinely approved. Jesus makes a statement, but isn't it also a command? Jeremy, is this probably in the indicative form, but it indicates something, but it also has the force of a command. You be the light. You be the light of the world. And if we're the light of the world, surely we are supposed to be the light of our neighborhood, right? We like to talk about being the light of the world. Oh, we're going to reach the world, the cosmos, everything. What about the neighborhood where you meet? We surely ought to be the light of that place. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. He just states a fact. If a city's up on a hill, there it is. Churches can metaphorically slide off of their hill, can they not? That the church mentioned in Revelation, which had abandoned their first love. The church in Corinth, we notice, had a few problems, and our churches have problems too. Churches, as has been discussed, churches are born, they live, they die. I think the average lifespan is 80 years. 80 years. Well, I got to guest preach over at Southwest. We noticed on their website, they're 82 years old. So slightly above average, okay? So you can think about your own congregation, where you're at in that life cycle. Wherever it is, you want it to be productive. If it's going to last till Jesus returns, great. If it's a 100-year-old church, if it's a 10-year-old church, you want it to be a light. You want it to be a city on a hill. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Let's avoid bowling in our churches. Okay, ping pong is okay, but no bowling. Okay, bowling are those light-snuffing attitudes, actions that extinguish the light, that hide the light. They can be attitudes, hyper-pharisaical attitudes that, you know, you might as well, you're just so mean-spirited that you might as well just put up a keep-out sign on your building, you know. Everybody who walks in feels like they're getting the stink eye, right? Or on the other extreme, the universalists who think, well, everybody's going to be okay in the end, so there's no urgency to share the light. Prejudices. Well, these people are all just here to take our jobs. Some things like that. There are bowl activities. Activities which can kind of diminish our light. They're good things, but they're distractions. Sometimes when I talk about evangelism, people right away, oh, benevolence. We got a food pantry. We give away clothes. Right? Good stuff. If you're doing evangelism with it, if there's some meaningful connection, it can become just a transaction, right? It can literally become them pulling up in a car and you handing out pop it in the trunk and you don't even talk to them. Well, okay. Anything that, you know, distracts us from our main mission of seeking and saving the lost. Instead, he says, you put it on a stand. So we promote lamp stands. And the lamb, too, by the way. That's some theology there for Wayne. Okay. You put it on a lamp. And so lamp stand mindsets to really develop the compassion to want to reach the people around us. Lamp stand ministries. And just asking the honest question, do they result in the gospel being shared? Do they result in conversions? Or, we can't always control that, do they result in Bible studies? Or at least someone saying, what are y'all doing around here? This looks pretty good. Do they at least put lost people in contact with the found people, the church people? Do they at least do that in a meaningful way? And as it says in verse 16, do they cause people to glorify God and say, y'all are doing something really amazing here? It gives light to everyone in the room. Your community is your room. Do you feel like your church is giving light to everyone that you can reasonably expect to come in contact with? So evaluate your ministries and ask, does it touch the people in the community? Especially, does it reach children? All the research shows that everybody, pretty much, or a large number, make a decision about God very young in life. They may formalize it a little later, but 8, 9, 10, they are deciding what they believe about God. They might be baptized later. You probably think of your own experience. I know mine came at about age 9 or so, when a man, not the regular preacher, but just a guy doing a lesson on a Sunday night, used a flashlight to illustrate what sin was. Oh, my light's not working. Why isn't my flashlight working? He unscrewed it, took out little pieces of paper or something blocking the battery that had different sins on it. And I was able at 8 or 9 to kind of think abstractly and understand what he was saying. Now, I wasn't baptized until later when Pat Peters taught a great camp session and it was convicted me. I need to do something. And so, boy, concentrate, reach the children. So that's scripture. Maybe you hadn't thought of it as an evangelism scripture. Talk about what we're doing. Just asking that question, haven't you dreamed of seeing your church look like its community? Don't you want it to literally, like whatever percentages of ethnicities are representative or different groups, young, old, you want it to look, your church to look like that? So that's what we want to do at South Walker. Small church, about 80 average attendance, and that's about our average age, 80. Am I right? I'm right, all right. I worked there, as David said, 1989 to 92 as the youth minister. They had about 220 back in those days. They sponsored us in Brazil. They were our main sponsoring church, sent people over, did great work, and have continued to do great work, but the neighborhood has changed. The neighborhood has changed over that 30-year period. If our church... Now, this is, as I said, this is not us. This is a church in Lubbock, okay? If our congregation looked like its community, I estimate that for every 12 families with children, I'm counting families with children, 9 would be Hispanic, 2 would be Anglo, 1 would be African-American. That's our neighborhood. And so I've been dreaming about South Walker addressing this for some time, even before I was working there. Again, for the second time. back in about 2009, Dr. Daniel Rodriguez was guest at a little luncheon we did up at OC. We called it the Urban Ministry Brown Bag Lunch. He came and talked about some of his research in his book, A Future for the Latino Church. Talked about various groups, evangelical groups, that are having success reaching the so-called second generation of Latinos. These are U.S.-born Latinos. And he just kind of fleshed that out. And right then I thought, South Walker. I was working for the Dell City Church at the time, but I thought, South Walker's got to do this. I didn't know that in 2017, just 2 years ago, I would be the preacher there. Okay, but that's what has happened. We've done a lot of research on this. We've made trips to Dallas. I've got my little team. They're my little elves back there helping me, okay? And we've been researching this. One thing we did, our intern and I, Jonathan Vieman, we went down to Jóvenes for Christ. That means Young People for Christ at Lubbock Christian. That's a conference started a few years ago by Hispanic youth leaders especially that realized, you know, when we go to our normal conferences in Spanish, it's all the old preachers get up there and they preach for about an hour each, all in Spanish. And these kids are Americans. They were born here. They study all day long in English. For many of them, English is, in a sense, their primary language. It's certainly their heart language. They may not even understand fully what the preachers are saying. Also, we don't get a chance to participate. So kind of started their thing here, and you can see the success of it. That's about 130 of these kids there. Well, it's definitely meeting a need. We know overall that almost 59 million Latinos in the U.S., what some people don't realize, about 65% were born here. So you see a Latino person walking down the street, it's a good possibility they were born here, especially if they're young. 90% under 18, U.S. born. 75% under 30, U.S. born. The second and the third generation Latinos, they are not necessarily speaking Spanish in the home. Of foreign-born Latinos, 97% speak Spanish to their children. Second generation, it goes down to 71%. By the third, it's only 49%. I met at the conference several young people, Hispanic families even, that I spoke more Spanish than they did because they were third and even fourth generation. This lady here, Alicia, who she and her husband Hugo have attended our English classes and some of our worship services, and I've had a bilingual Bible study with them. She said, "My son, he won't speak to me in Spanish anymore. He's 8 years old and he's in school." And she regrets that. She wanted to learn English, but she also wanted to keep the Spanish, right? That's so important for the community. We want to keep our heritage. We want to keep our roots. And they lament that, and it causes some friction and tension. That's where these kids live. So the challenge for them is this. This is Dan Rodriguez's premise of his research. U.S.-born Hispanics do not always feel at home in Spanish-speaking churches, but may also feel out of place in predominantly Anglo churches. You think that's probably right? Based on the numbers of Hispanic people you are not reaching in your churches, it's just a comfort level with things. And so we are going to try to address that. As I kind of alluded to, the young men that would try to speak at these youth conferences that were all in Spanish would sometimes get criticized for their poor Spanish. And sometimes the old guard was more concerned about preserving the culture. Now, you can imagine that, you know, we do the same thing. Anglos do the same thing. Older Hispanic people do the same thing. Well, it's hard on the younger ones to do that. They are third culture kids living between cultures. How often I see, almost if I go out shopping or anything in my neighborhood where I work, almost every day, here's mom. And here's a, you know, a little son or daughter, and she pushes them forward, and he steps up and he says, "She wants to buy 2 pounds of, you know, whatever." And so these kids are living in between worlds. And so we think we can reach them. We think we can reach them. We've got a there's our real building, okay? And the fisheye thing makes it look enormous. So it's good size. I mean, it can fit, 300 and 400 people in there. We've got a fellowship hall that's large, 200 people in there. A basement with 12 children's classrooms. It's also the community's tornado shelter. Last time the sirens went off, I was having a nice little Bible study with a guy during the tornado shelter siren thing. We're getting a new roof right now. Okay, insurance wouldn't pay, so we raised the money, and we're doing it right now. So we're right in the middle of all that. Back in the day, the church that became Oak Crest met here, and they were as large as, they tell me, 600 members, meeting in two services. There's plenty of parking, so we feel like we've got a good location for that. Talk about the neighborhood briefly. So there we are in the middle, so we're kind of considered our community broadly bound by the highways. Okay, I-40 to the north, 240 to the south, I-35 to the east, I-44 to the west. That's where we're working. That's where we're living. And we're right in the middle of it. All these schools, you can see, all save one, are in excess of 75% Hispanic, and some of them more. These are the elementary schools. Same with the junior highs and the high schools. For many years, we've tutored kids from this school. They're changing that into a middle school, so we will now be tutoring kids from Fillmore, which is 81% Hispanic. We feel like for a long time to come, there will be Latinos in this neighborhood. If those are the percentages, at least, do you feel safe that at least for the next 10 years, right? If not more, they're going to be there. So we feel like we're in the right place. By the way, in the yellow font, that represents the neighborhoods from which somebody from that neighborhood has come to one of our activities. So we feel like, okay, this is where this is where we need to be. One surprising thing as we talk about this work is that we intend to go forward. It's a church that primarily worships and expresses itself in English, because these are second generation Hispanic people, English, but with Latino leadership and a Latino flavor to it. We saw that up close and personal in the worship and the lessons and just the conversations with the kids in Lubbock. And we saw what that looks like. Out of 130 kids, I probably only heard four or five that were really more comfortable conversing in Spanish. When they were just standing around visiting or playing ping pong, they were speaking English. Okay. Their songs, they would sing a mix. They would sing some of the old standards that they sing in the Hispanic Spanish language worship. But they sang a lot of the contemporary songs probably this college ministry would know here at this congregation. That's our other intern, Jonathan Hernandez. We got two Jonathans. We're still working out the nicknames. We want to call him Lil J because he's about this tall, but I don't know if he's going to go for it. But that's him addressing the group there, and of course in English, but he's bilingual as well. So what does English with Latino flavor mean? Enthusiasm that sometimes we Anglos lack, if we're being honest, right? An enthusiasm, some humor, affection, the little air kisses. We do the little air kisses in Latino culture. Spontaneity. We Anglos, man, we micromanage and we plan. We start on time, we finish on time. We don't even know, we just, if it's time to shut it down, it's time to shut it down. We're about to have a baptism here, people. We've heard stories of, a Latino baptism becomes a worship service. And in churches where a Spanish language group was meeting, Anglo person was overheard to say, "Oh, we better get out of here because the Hispanic group's going to have a baptism. That was going to take a long time." All right. So, okay, it's just different cultural differences. If the reverse thing was happening, if Latinos were being sent to an Anglo culture, what would they have to learn? Have to learn Anglos start on time and finish on time. You can't be just making it up as you go along. And you better print out the order of worship. Okay, so you would reverse it. Well, so that's part of it. Family, the importance of family and the extended family. So one part of this equation is that will be addressed is having someone on staff that is especially ministering to the first generation, the grandma and grandpas, and the moms and dads are going to come who primarily speak Spanish still. So because the whole family may come, that extended family. Now, one difference with a, we believe, with a second generation led church to a first generation, in a lot of our Latino congregations, the preacher is in charge and has a lot of authority. Very few of our churches, Latino churches, have elders here in Oklahoma City and other parts. And so sometimes there's some tendencies toward authoritarianism that the second generation, the third generation, just can't tolerate. And so sometimes splits happen. So we're hoping to kind of address that from the beginning and have a shared leadership. I'm inviting this group to come be a missionary team with me. I'm just a team member. I'm not the pastor. We're reconfiguring our offices during the roof remodel. We're going to have to anyway. All the lights are damaged from water. The previous setup was a big preacher office with dimmable lights. What's up with that, Jeremy? That's kind of weird. Get rid of the dimmable lights, I guess. Huge office, big conference room over here, little youth minister office. That's all going bye-bye. We're going to get five equal-size offices and a reception area. I'm just part of the team. Okay, I'm going to be nearer to the bathroom. Okay, but other than that, it's going to be all equal, all right? All right, yeah. Preacher in charge mentality is, we're going to try to work on that a little bit. A well-trained, primarily second-generation mission team is what we are recruiting to come work with us. So we can't do this alone. We are asking churches to sponsor and help. This is Jacob and Savannah Bautista. They are in the application process, and I can't say the church's name yet, but we have a church that wants to fully support them. And they're going to be meeting next week, and assuming everything goes well, that's going to happen. He's from, lives in Stephenville, Texas, was born in Arkansas. His father is a first-generation Mexican preacher who's worked in the United States in Spanish-speaking churches, still does, preaches for the Iglesia de Cristo in Arlington, Texas, his father. So he kind of knows both sides of it. He knows the challenges of Anglo churches. He knows the challenges of Hispanic churches. So he's a really good worker. Jonathan Veelman, raised in the Edmond Church of Christ. One of our interns has worked with us this summer. Jonathan Hernandez, a new freshman at OC, just really is starting this week as OC is kicking up. His father, Cruz Hernandez, preaches for the Hidden Valley Church of Christ in Houston. You may have seen them in the Christian Chronicle. They get flooded every time there's a hurricane. Their building has been flooded multiple times. So he also understands that dynamic of being in two cultures. We also hope to have somebody specific full-time working with youth and children. As I said, someone working with the older generation. And just try to have good quality leadership in all those areas. An ongoing outreach to recently arrived immigrants will continue. The first week I was there, we launched and started an ESL, English as a Second Language program. And I mean, I just got one of those little cheap yard signs at Office Depot and plopped it in the ground. Free English classes. We started getting phone calls in Spanish. South Walker Church of Christ, hablas español? Sí, yo hablo poquito. And then that's how we went. And got that thing rolling. There was the one lady, not Hispanic, that came in, and she wanted to know about the free eyeglasses, free English classes. She was looking for the free eyeglasses. She really needed free eyeglasses. So anyway, since then we've gotten a bigger sign, as you can see, okay? That little sign was too small. We usually run two classes, a beginner class, an intermediate class. Where do you get these teachers? Well, OC students, in our case, that are TEFL majors, teaching English as a foreign language, we get them for free. Okay, somebody else pays for that. And they come down and help us with that. I've had a Bible study result from that. We've had people attend services because of that. It's about location for us in our neighborhood. Again, I just put out the sign and here the people came. So this may not work as with much success as your church, but even the small towns have large Hispanic communities in Oklahoma and other parts of our country. So or other demographics, other groups that may want to learn and perfect English. One key component is just kind of what I call ongoing education of both Anglo and Latino members, that Christ is centered, we're centered on Christ, He's above all, and that ultimately language and culture and customs do not matter, but commitment to Christ does. And yes, we all understand, just like I raised my kids in Brazil, I wanted them to speak English and learn culture, but I knew that there was a possibility that they may totally go Brazilian, okay? Or go Australian in the case, maybe. That has to be okay. We want them to be above all disciples. And so informing both groups about that, informing the older Latino generation, listen, you're raising your kids in the United States of America. You cannot expect them not to embrace some of the language and culture and customs. But more importantly, don't you want them to be disciples, whether they express themselves in English or Spanish? That's the goal. So some of our programs we've doing, one thing we discovered with the ESL classes that the school-age kids speak English, the preschool-age kids don't. So right away we had to get Jonathan in there, and he got the neighbor kid Enrique involved, and they're translating the Bible lesson for Miss Beverly, okay, on Wednesday night. Whiz Kids is something our church has done. While I was in Brazil, they started it. For 22 years, they have tutored a local elementary school, converted kids, seen them grow up and become Christians. So that's important. That has done so much good to keep our church compassionate toward the community as they work with those kids. That's the big end-of-the-year event. And then we did a little summer soccer school. Luckily, I'm a soccer guy, so we did that. That was fun. Is that having any effect? I think there is receptivity. This is Jesus Fierro there in the top left. This guy has come to everything we offer since learning about the ESL and is the main student for David on Sunday mornings if he doesn't have to work. The cool thing now is when he has to work on Sunday morning, I get this text from Jesus, and it says, "Do you have holy meeting in the afternoon?" Holy meeting. Oh, he means church. Holy meeting sounds better, though, doesn't it? So he's brought his wife and his kids to just about everything. Studied with Hugo and Alicia, as I mentioned before. An older couple named Juan and Maria have come to English, come to our worship services. And then I've sort of counseled with these three English students, adults, about their teenagers. And I can tell you, it's just cross-cultural problems they're having with their rebellious American teens. And they can't quite communicate with them and understand them. So I feel like the receptivity is there. We haven't baptized anybody from the Latino community. We haven't really started yet. Okay, but there are signs that we're going to have some receptivity. Okay, just real quick, we've got mission partnerships. All our elders, they read a statement saying they're embracing this wholeheartedly. Our members are on board. We don't have any of the, you know, prejudices that expressed by the folks. They've lived in that community a long time. They know it's changed, and if you want to reach your neighbors, this is who it's going to be. Got Southwest, North Mac, Memorial Road, Del City, all helping financially this year. Another church to be named later that's really going to be helping. Looking for additional partnerships and also people, to join this work, especially second generation Latinos. A few principles real quick as we kind of wrap this up that maybe you can take and use in your context. Number one, define your community. In missions, we learned it's more effective to try to reach one people group. Now, parts, we hate that because every tribe, every tongue, every nation, every tribe, every tongue, every nation is not going to be in one congregation. So you kind of have to target one people group.
Now, the cool thing is when you start doing that, they've found in these churches that have done that, that as they become more Latino, they also become more diverse multiculturally, and other groups start showing up because they feel more comfortable as well. So it can do that, but you kind of got to target sort of one group. Our group, of course, is that Latino community. Oklahoma City has a large Vietnamese population. There are other subgroups here and there. Again, even in the small towns, there are people. Decide what kind of cross-cultural evangelism is needed, and it is needed. Sunday is still the most segregated day of the week. I was a soccer coach at OCA for a few years, and coaching the high school girls, we were to play Madill, Oklahoma, southern Oklahoma. The bus pulls up, the coach gets off, he's Latino. The girls get off, and all but one are Latina. Madill, Oklahoma? Yeah, Madill, Oklahoma. So you need this even in small towns. But not only that, we just need to cross cultures in terms of our middle class sort of Christian culture may not fit the neighborhood anymore. And it may be a working class neighborhood and this kind of thing. So we got to cross cultures there. Research the target culture, as we alluded to. How do they express themselves religiously, their challenges? Cast the vision to really inspire the church. You have to work on that a while. In some ways, South Walker was working on it for 22 years as they tutored kids in the community. It's got that the elders have to be on board, and whoever the voice is from the pulpit has to be on board, or it's going to be hard to do this. Train and recruit to reach the folks. We have partnered with Great Cities Missions. I was part of a team that was a Great Cities team back in the day. They work especially among Latino cultures. And so use the tools. We learned about Agos that Brother Brandon is doing. Use that tool to find out who else is out there doing stuff that could inform what you want to do. Deliberately have your ministry team look like the community. So you have to fire some people. No. You have to hire some people. And how do we afford that? Well, interns are a great way. Interns are a great way to get some cheap labor that looks like the community if you can't hire. And for our context, it's not just enough to do like some Anglo churches have done and say, well, we'll hire a Spanish minister and he'll do that. It's got to be the team, okay? Because they're, again, 80% Hispanic. And then pray to the Lord of the harvest and then go, or in our case, stay with a new vision. Got a few minutes for questions. The biggest question I get, I'll already answer, is how did you convince the church to go along with this? And that was really the easiest part. I think it's because the previous preacher, my great mentor and friend, Paul Sparks, was himself a missionary to Northern Ireland, stayed about 4 years, would have stayed longer had the political violence not been so bad at that time. Heart of a missionary, preaching every Sunday for 37 years. So he definitely prepared their hearts. And then that tutoring program, again, I think just softened. It's easy to say, well, the border and, you know, people are coming here and that, you know, all that stuff. But when you work with people directly and you tutor their kids and you get to know the moms and the dads, you just don't have those sort of hang-ups. Got till a few more minutes, 5 more minutes it looks like. What questions? Jeremy.
I'm really interested. Our context at Wilshire is a very cross-cultural, primarily black community. Mm-hmm. And Wilshire, through the years, has kind of reflected community.
Yeah.
But there seems to me, given our political climate, and given just the nature of first, second, third generation, that there are kind of two different mindsets between Hispanic and black culture. And that is, it feels to me, and I'm asking, it feels to me there's more of an exile trying to find a new home among the Hispanic culture that opens opens certain doors that maybe within a black setting,
yeah,
it's more settled with culture. And I'm curious, how does our current political discourse and all of that, how has your congregation mm-hmm. worked within that? How has that changed the way the community sees you?
Yeah.
And what about that exile factor that goes into that?
Yeah, I think at least from the preaching standpoint, Paul has always modeled, you know, we just don't talk, you know, politics directly. We talk principles, but not, you know, dogging the other side type things. Because I think the gospel's for all, whatever letter they have beside their name. Certainly it plays into work among Latinos because immigration is an important issue that they care about. And if you've got too many of your Anglo members, you know, with bumper stickers that express something, you couldn't have that. You know, you got to be careful of that. Again, yeah. Now, you know, our people are conservative, so you can kind of imagine which way they vote. But I don't know. We're just blessed that there's not a lot of, you know, over the top zeal for that kind of thing. So that helps a lot. So you kind of have to, you know, have that expectation. That's one of the things on our team we'll talk about is, guys, we have to be careful about, you know, okay, you can have your stuff you believe politically, but you got to be careful about your public profile here. You know, you don't want to alienate people before you even get a chance to talk to them. So yeah, it's important. Irony of it, the younger Jonathan Hernandez, political science major at OC. He wants to be president one day. So he's very involved politically. That is a challenge. And I agree with your assessment of the black community and the differences there and the challenge you have because there's some different cultures. Now, one thing I do see that's similar at play is we do have sometimes black families that will visit so-called Anglo congregation, younger ones, just because they're kind of tired of the way things are run. You know, a little bit of the mentality of the preacher is all powerful, okay? That dynamic is at work. Now, that happens in Anglo churches too, right? Small towns or just small congregations where how come everybody on the staff and the treasurer and everything is kind of related to you, the preacher? What's up with that? Well, that happens in Anglo churches too, but so yeah. Good question. Others? Maybe one more. Then you already know everything you need to know. So go out and do cross-cultural evangelism. I've taught you everything. So, hey, I appreciate it. God bless you. I did bring the little dog and pony show, so the little display board and some brochures. Obviously, we're not shy about saying, you know, we're looking for sponsoring churches, but also just trying to network. Who knows, your congregation may have a second generation Latino person that ought to be on our staff. Okay, we need to know who that person is because we're recruiting a team. So keep that in mind and just take one if you just want to kind of keep up with our work. You could email me. I'd put you in the newsletter email list. So let me pray and then we'll be dismissed. Righteous God and Father, thank you for this time. God, I thank you for everyone's interest in this topic. Please help us, whatever setting we're in, to be willing to reach out to everyone we come in contact with the good news that Jesus is the Son of God, that He reigns, and that He's returning, and that we can have salvation in Him. So bless us in those efforts. I pray this in the name of Jesus. Amen.